You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Rujak. Well, happy new year and happy new wine trends. Or maybe not so much. Joining us today with his wine-filled crystal ball is Rick Cushman. Hi, Rick. Welcome to Insight.
Hi. Nice to see you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. So, you know, we got to do it. Are there any new wine trends?
Yeah, actually, you know, it does seem like every year international trade laws require anybody involved with any product, service, beverage, piece of culture is required to give predictions. And so I'm actually here to make fun of them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the truth is not a lot has changed in most things. I mean, and wine and food, those aren't consumer electronics or even TV. You know, they change slowly if they change at all. In fact, one of the things I've been doing over the years is sort of tracking some of the predictions. And I've noticed over the last 5 years, almost the exact same ones come up. You know, we're going to be drinking indigenous grapes, which means, you know, grapes that are native to an area that we've never heard of, from some sub-region that we've never heard of, made into some wine that, of course, we've never heard of. And, you know, one of the ones that it comes up constantly, and it's a wine I like, by the way, is, and this goes back to 2012. Every year I've seen a prediction that we're going to be drinking lots of Cabernet Franc. And I looked up the numbers, and it's almost exactly the same. And I saw one just yesterday that had more Cab Franc.
Can you describe that wine?
Cab Franc, well, so Cab is one of the quote-unquote Bordeaux grapes, one of the grapes from the region of Bordeaux. It's a slightly lighter in body than Cabernet Sauvignon. It's one of the parents of Cabernet Sauvignon. It is a little less tannic.
Not as light as a Pinot or anything
No. Yeah. It's sort of in between. It's more closer to Merlot in body, maybe a little closer to Cabernet in taste. But it's a great wine. If you see it on a wine list, it's, you know, it tends to have maybe a little more green or herbal notes to it, if you like that sort of thing.
Not a fruit forward.
No. Well, it depends how it's made. It always depends how it's made. But another one of the really goofy predictions that I saw just the other day was two of them. One was, you know, and this is the thing, and frankly, if you see this in almost anything as a consumer, it's like, be a little careful from, because it's a requirement of most people in media. Their job is, whatever their beat is, they have to talk about all the changes in the new year. Right. And this was one from a major magazine, 7 changes in wine for 2019. Huh. There aren't going to be any. Not big ones. But this was one of them was drinking wine in airlines will rise to new heights. Oh, isn't that a clever headline? And it was because one super private jet company, very private, very small, very expensive, does wine tastings on their flights. So now she decided that, well, now everybody's going to do that because she's just looking for something.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, another one was like new grapes that you will be drinking. I always love the headlines. You will be drinking these grapes. And they're grapes like Marquette and Partite Arvine. I know everybody's always looking for those. Actually, Marquette is a grape that was developed by the University of Minnesota to be cold resistant. It's been around since 2006. And you know what? I don't think most people are going to be drinking that red wine. It's just, they're not going to find it, you know. But so this is the thing. I just always say, however, there are certain things that we do know about the wine world. If you'd like to hear it.
I'd like to hear that, and I would like to hear if America's favorite wine has changed.
Well, that's exactly right. And the answer is no. So, and that's the thing. You know, we drink what we drink. And the truth of it is, in the larger context, you know, especially as younger people, you know, turn of drinking age and the world is slightly different, you know, we are a little less locked in. But by vast amounts, the two major grapes that everybody drinks are Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay.
Is that nationally?
Nationally, internationally, California. Minnesota, the southern coast of Florida, you name it. They around the world and certainly in the United States and in California, those are the big grapes. And after that, there are also grapes that people recognize. Sauvignon Blanc.
Sure.
If there's any trend in Sauvignon Blanc, we seem to drink more from New Zealand now, but that's always been a popular style, which is a little grassy and a little more citrusy. In the reds, Pinot Noir and Merlot, you know, have been big. They are big. Poor Merlot got beat up, although it's sort of making a comeback now. And what's happened is that there are, you know, one of the reasons why Merlot sort of took a hit besides the movie Sideways and the insult, was that there was so much of it, of course it's going to go down, and people planted it in places where it probably shouldn't have been planted.
People kind of referred to it all almost as, like, that's not even a wine. You know, really got a bad rap.
Yeah, except that it is. And when if you pour it, it's exactly the same. I did a story once where I called a bunch of winemakers, and I said, because it's very much like Cabernet. It's just a little softer. I said, can you tell the difference, not your own, but somebody else's really well-made Merlot and their really well-made Cabernet Sauvignon? And all 10 winemakers said no. And the reason is they have the same profile. They have more or less the same flavors. That's sort of the dark fruit, maybe touch of greenness that's nice. You know, this sort of plushness, you know, fruit like plums kind of thing, you know, more in Merlot maybe than Cab, but they're pretty similar. I always say to think of them as like the same set of furniture, but Cabernet is a harder chair and Merlot is a soft couch.
Well, let's talk about prices too, because there seems to be a range that people are looking for if they're having wine with dinner on a regular basis. They don't want to spend $20 or $30. They'd go broke.
Well, yeah, yes and no. You know, the thing is, so prices are not going up. I mean, that's sort of the good news. You know, there's been a lot of, I mean, one of the things that if there is change in 2019 is that economics affects everything, you know, tariffs and seasons. But 2018 was actually a pretty good wine season, so that does actually sort of help out. But the prices for the wines that most people normally buy are more or less going to be the same. However, what has been slowly happening over the last few years is that we tend to drink slightly more expensive wines. The growth in the wine business is what they're calling premium wine. So that's really above $10.
Mm-hmm.
I know some, you know, we might not think of that. But that $10 to $20 range of wines, there's more and more, there are more and more of them out there. There's different styles, especially that $10 to maybe $15, $16. You're seeing, you know, wine in bourbon barrels and things like that, you know, that give them a little bit of a change. So there's that. The wines over $20 are also growing again. You know, they took a real hit during the recession and took a while to get back. Just in terms of people buying them, the prices aren't really going up if you're not in Napa Valley. But in terms of for regular folk, the wine that you like is still going to be pretty much the same.
You know, I think I would find a lot of people would agree that it for some reason, it is irritating to go into a restaurant and see a bottle of wine that you know costs that restaurant $4.99, and they're selling it for $38. I mean, we understand the service glasses and all that stuff, but there comes a point when,
well,
really?
So let's talk about that in a second, but you are not alone, my friend. You, you are absolutely right. In fact, Jordan Winery, which does this survey every year, they're a winery out there in Sonoma County, a pretty good one, a pretty big one. And they surveyed, you know, took like 1,000 American wine drinkers, so people who drink wine. And 64%, basically two-thirds of them said that they prefer to drink wine at home. And one of the reasons is because wine in restaurants is just too expensive or too confusing. The other thing they said with a pretty large majority is that they tend to choose wines in restaurants because they know them. They choose the wines they know. And so what that tells you is a couple of things. One is that, like you said, that they feel that they're too expensive. Two, this is probably not the time to experiment if you can be spending this much for a wine. It's a note, by the way, to all those people who are building their really eclectic wine lists out there. There's lots and lots of studies done. One of my favorites from the University of Cornell, which has a school of hotel administration, that is when there are wines on the wine list that people recognize, you sell more wine, sometimes 20 to 30% more wine. But back to your question, which is why is it so expensive? And the answer is, in the restaurant business, the margins on food.
They're making their money on the alcohol.
They make a tiny margin. It's like what we would call white tablecloth. Sometimes the margin is like 1 or 2%. And so they make their money on alcohol. Absolutely right. So that's part of it. And part of it is that they, you know, there is a storage. You know, if you're buying wine, you have to buy it in bulk. You have to store it. You're not sure you're going to sell it. And then there's the glasses and the breakage and all that kind of stuff. So some of it is exactly that, and just some of it is because, I mean, same thing for spirits. If you think about how much you spend for a shot of something that you could buy a whole bottle for,
sure,
two of those shots.
Right.
But so,
yeah. Well, this is Rick Cushman, and you know Rick. We're talking about the wine scene in 2019. I want to be sure and get in some discoveries you've made, because you visited a couple of, I don't know if they're new wineries or just new to you.
They are relatively new, and they are new to me. And you know, Monterey's a great area for wine, by the way. It is, and we were down there over the holidays. And wandering around, Carmel has like, I don't know, 12 or 13 taste rooms in the little village. It's a great way to taste, where you can taste a lot of different sort of smaller places that you might not otherwise discover. And I ran across two that I really, really liked. One of them is called Windy Oaks, Windy Oaks Estate, and they're based down in Monterey. A lot of the wine comes from the San Jose Highlands and the hills around there. Another is Da Tierra Vineyard. Windy Oaks, they both did really well. Great Pinot Noirs, slightly different styles. Windy Oaks was maybe a little more subtle, a little more soft and nuanced. De Tierra's was a bit rounder, richer, but both of them are really beautiful. And the tasting rooms have just these charming people in them that love wine, but that are not intimidating. You know, it's just exactly the opposite. They're just, welcoming and they're great places. I posted about them on Facebook, but they're two places to know if you're down in that area.
Okay. And your final prediction, stem or no stem?
It doesn't matter. I'll tell you what, as a guy who spills and one of my rules of wine is wear dark colors. No stem is not a bad way to go because at least you're less likely to break your glass.
That is Rick Cushman talking about wine. Rick, thanks for being on Insight and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
That is Insight for today. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ruyak. Insight is produced by Bert Johnson and Cody Drabble. Our digital team is Chris Hagen, Casey Gardner, and Emily Zentner. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. We're back with another live show tomorrow. Thank you for joining us.